This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buckeyes taking on the Ducks. That's the first test for the Buckeyes this year. Man will be on the call, NBC Sports. Noah Eagle joins us right now in the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline at 9:01 and 55 seconds. It sounded like that was recorded. This is absolutely live. Good morning, Noah.
That was very specific, and I appreciate that. I am a particular guy, so I'm ready to rock.
Noah, help me out here, because I got people in the room that are like, are you gonna play the Bob Costas for Noah Eagle? It's like, the guy's 72. He's allowed to make a mistake here and there, okay? Geez, the guy's a legend. He's iconic. He's my favorite of all time. And they're sitting here trying to beg me to play the audio for you, Noah, like Noah, you're going to react to it. He's a Syracuse legend, Noah.
Don't answer any of that. Don't address any of that. We're going to move right on. What have you thought of Will Howard so far in some of the tape that you've watched? What's made him better for the Ohio State Buckeyes offense than Kyle McCord?
Well, another Cuse legend, I guess, is what you're saying in Kyle
True.
McCord.
True, yes.
If we're going with orange legends at this point. But Will Howard, we got a chance to talk to him yesterday. I was thoroughly impressed by just his presence, which I think has stood out now both in leadership and on the field. But in terms of actual play, the main difference to me is his physical build and then his ability with his legs as a result. He's hard to bring down. And so even if, and it's been a big if the first five games of the season because of this offensive line, but even if there's a free rusher, it feels like he can shrug off a tackle, extend a play, and then make a play. He keeps his eyes downfield. He's incredibly experienced. And, you know, Kyle McCord is a talented quarterback. And I think he probably gets looked at unfairly in some respects with his time last year at Ohio State. I mean, I think that's the nature of the beast. And I think if you can't handle that, then that's what Ohio State's about. And so those who can handle it are the ones that get looked at fondly and as legends as they move on. You know, Will Howard has that in him, and I think part of that is because he's played in a lot of these moments before, and he's failed in some of these moments before. And I think that's the MO of this team, is despite all the successes that they've had over the last couple of years together, they've all come back with this idea of, one, we know what it feels like to lose in our big game, and two, we know what it feels like to win in those big games. And so they're using those lessons. And I think Will is one of those people, even though he hasn't been here specifically, that's using those lessons of the past. And it feels like they have harnessed that into this season.
Noah, Ryan Day is 61-8. It's an insane 41-3 in the Big Ten. And yet it seems like every time I see him, he looks like he is on edge. Like, it's tough to even get a smile out of the guy. I don't know if you've had a chance to catch up with him yet this week for your meeting, but is some of the pressure, though, a little bit off given the 12-team playoff format now, or is this just he has to win every game?
Yeah, I don't want to say it's off, and I don't know if I want to say he has to win every game. You know, if they lose this week, I still think that they're in position to go out and compete for a national championship, but I do think that there are two games in particular. It is, as they like to say, the team up north, and it is a national championship. So whatever you have to do to get there and then eventually win it, I think those are the two most important. You know, I don't remember if I told you guys this last year, but Joshua Perry said to me that a lot of years in Ohio State, you know, 2 years ago, I think it was, when they just barely lost to Georgia in the semifinal, they could have won that game, and they probably would have beaten TCU in the national championship game. They would have been national champions. But because they lost to Michigan that year, a lot of people in Columbus, and you guys know this, would have viewed that season still as a failure. And so when you say the three losses in the Big Ten, they're the three most important losses of his career so far at Ohio State. That's the issue, because I'm with you. You look at his record, you look at his resume, it's sparkling. But I think that's the difference of being at a place like Ohio State. As Ryan Day tells his team all the time, you can't have bad days there. You're not afforded bad days. If you go to Ohio State, if you coach at Ohio State, that's just the reality of the situation. And so winning every game, probably not needed anymore, but it would be a nice little bonus, I think, for a guy that's felt the heat a little bit.
Noah Eagle with us on the hotline is going to be on the call this weekend. So the schedule Ohio State has had has, you know, pretty much been absurd. You're going to see more and more, I think, with the playoff, hopefully better matchups earlier in the season. With that said, is there any worry, maybe even from Ohio State's point of view, that their schedule really hasn't gotten them ready for this game?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I actually think it's the opposite. I think that you look at Michigan last year, who won it all. Their first nine games, basically, were against unranked teams, I believe, and they slaughtered them. I mean, they won by an average, I think, of 30 points or something like that. And so the last three games of the season against Penn State, Maryland, Ohio State, two of those obviously top 10 level teams, one of them their biggest rival and the best team they probably faced all season until the college football playoff, not probably, 1,000%. And they were ready. And I think part of that was they were fresh because they didn't have to strain guys for four quarters, which is the same deal with Ohio State this year versus last year where you had week four, that Notre Dame matchup, that goes until the literal final play of the game, is an emotional win, takes a lot out of a team, and now you've got to now refocus and move back on. So I think there is something to be said about the way they started this season, which was three opponents that they were clearly head and shoulders better than. And then even their first two conference games, that first game, Michigan State, this is year one of the Jonathan Smith era, they're finding their footing through that. Iowa's defense is a great test to me, and it's honestly the perfect way to get ready for a game like Oregon because defensively, you know you're going to see one of the best schemes. Phil Parker's arguably the best defensive coordinator in the country. They send guys to the NFL in the first couple of rounds of the draft on an annual basis, and they develop better than anybody. So you know they're going to be disciplined, and we saw that in the first half. A couple turnovers were costly, and it was a one-possession game, and then by the third quarter, they blew it open. So I do think that they were tested in the right way. Now, the offense is not even close to what you're going to see from Oregon, but this is an Ohio State defense that returns basically every starter from last year, just about. They added the most highly touted piece in the transfer portal in Caleb Downs, and now it's year three of Jim Knowles, and they're playing faster than they did in each of the first 2 years. And then to go back to the earlier point, they have battle scars, and I think they're using those to their advantage. So I'm not concerned with them being ready for a game like this whatsoever.
Noah Eagle joining us, NBC Sports, on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Forgive me, Noah, have you ever done a game at Autzen Stadium?
I have not. This is number one.
Up until now, and we'll find out, what has been your favorite atmosphere in college football?
It's impossible to choose one. It really is. And the Big Ten now has so many. And even last week is going
to
be...
Noah, would you like to power rank them? Would you like
to
give you a little more flexibility?
Play the music for Noah.
I'd like to go back to the Bob Costas question, if that was the case. I would say that in terms of Big Ten, it's hard not to say the Shoe is towards the top of that list. And the Big House, for that matter. There's a reason that those two are the premier programs in the country and in certainly this conference because they bring that level of enthusiasm every week. I think that you go to Madison and you are going to get a show in Wisconsin. You're going to get that energy and you get jump around before the fourth quarter and all of that comes with it. It's awesome there. I think Washington last week was really special. It's just an amazing setting with the water, with the mountains, and then when you have a big game like Michigan coming in, and there were a number of Michigan fans there, it was loud. They were into it. But from what I've heard, Todd Blackledge told me that he's been obviously just about everywhere in the country, and he said, it's not going to be this week, it's not going to be as many fans as the Big House or the Horseshoe or Penn State, but he said for a big game, he's not sure if he's heard a louder stadium in college football than Austin. And so that's where we're excited because obviously this is a huge game, two top three teams. And for Oregon, this is their real coronation within the Big Ten. And so can we get that level of atmosphere? I would say it's going to be highly likely.
Lima's not going to like this statement to you. I want to see if you agree. I think it's a better conference now with the teams in the West involved. The travel that's involved. I mean, USC having to go to Minnesota and finding the Gremlins in the fourth quarter and losing that football game. Then they got to go to Maryland. And then, you know, hearing about Penn State, who has to go out West, and you got to wait. They got to drive to Harrisburg because they don't have a runway long enough in State College. Then they have to fly out to USC. These are new challenges, and because you can lose a game, in a way, for me as a football fan, no, I think it's made the regular season more interesting.
I'm with you, and obviously I'm going to be biased because it allows me to do some fun matchups like this weekend. But on top of that, so just to use the example you're using here of the challenges that present, I think it's been 8 teams so far have had to travel 2-plus time zones in the conference, and 7 of them have lost. The only one that's won is Indiana going to UCLA. We did that game week 3, and right now Indiana looks like a buzzsaw. I mean, Kurt Cignetti's got them just on a track to greatness. But with that, the one thing that Indiana did and the other teams didn't, Indiana traveled in Friday, and the other teams said, you know, we're going to get ahead of it. We're going to travel in Thursday. We're going to readjust to the time zone, whatever it might be. Indiana said, no, we're going to stay on our time zone. We're going to do it the normal way we would do it if we were just going to a normal Big Ten game of the past. And we're going to live with the result. And their result was a win. And so Ohio State is actually adopting that mentality. They're traveling in Friday, so tomorrow. And they're staying completely on East Coast time, which I think is the best way to do it. You just keep your routine at that point.
Don't they have coursework to do? They have classes they've got to get ready for.
Oh,
come on,
yeah.
This is ridiculous. Yeah. They're student athletes.
Let me ask you guys this. Were you doing stuff on a Saturday when you woke up when you were in school?
No, I was very involved. A number of different on-campus organizations. I took that very seriously.
Yeah, no, you do sound like a teacher's pet, if I'm going to be honest. I would say that Friday, Saturday was not necessarily, especially as I got into senior year, I would stack my classes, so I had 0 Friday class. That was a big thing for me. I think second semester junior year and my entire senior year, I had 0 classes on Friday. It was 3-day weekend for me. So that was just how I did it. I can't speak for every one of those student-athletes, but what I can say is if you've got a 4, 5, 6-hour flight, it's plenty of time to get some work done with some Wi-Fi on that plane.
Noah Eagle joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So for Dan Lanning and his team, do you have keys, things that they can take advantage of against Ohio State at all? Because I think they've played it so close to the vest, so vanilla, there's nothing that I can see that's penetrable right now because of the opponents that they've played. I don't think they've had to do anything that's exposed them at all.
Well, I think Ohio State is the most complete team in the country, personally. I think their talent, top to bottom, is probably number one or number 1A in the country with a team like Georgia or a team like Texas. So it's hard to say, hey, you've got to target this one thing, because I just think they're good at everything. But if Oregon's going to win this game one, the one X factor is always going to be the venue and the environment. And Ohio State, like you guys have said, they haven't played in that yet. You go to Michigan State, it's nowhere near what you're going to see this weekend. So how are they going to handle that first time this season with this particular group, a group that for the most part is, what, 85, 90% what you had last year. So in theory, they've been there before. And even the transfers, aside from a true freshman in Jeremiah Smith, Will Howard has played in a Big 12 championship. Quinshon Judkins played in the SEC. Seth McLaughlin played in the SEC. Caleb Downs played in the SEC. They've been in big atmospheres before, so I'm not necessarily concerned. But in terms of what you're going to see out of Oregon, I think Dylan Gabriel has more experience at quarterback than anybody in the country. And they had Bo Nix, who by the end of his career last year had started 61 games in college. And if Dylan Gabriel starts every game this season and they go beyond the regular season, which they're expected to do, he'll break that record. So he's going to be the most experienced starting quarterback in the history of college football. And when you've got someone who just has that, and he's been in rivalry games, and he's led game-winning drives, I think that Oregon's looking at this saying, we just want to keep this close in the fourth quarter and give our experienced quarterback a chance like he did last year in the Red River rivalry, where he, in the final minute, led a game-winning drive. And similar to Will Howard, they actually are very similar quarterbacks. Dylan Gabriel has his legs as that extra aspect that you've got to keep an eye on. They both can run it in the red zone, and that's what's going to make both teams effective there. They both can extend plays on third down. And so this pass rush from Ohio State has to be extra careful about how they're gambling, because we know they're going to be willing to be aggressive, especially on third down opportunities. And Gabriel's seen just about everything before. So I would say he's the guy that, if he's playing well and he's understanding what he's seeing and he's quick to locate where his check downs and where his openings might be, then that's where we're going to have a shootout. And for me, that's a great thing. I'll take the shootout every single day as a broadcaster.
What an awesome breakdown. Noah Eagle, NBC Sports. He'll be on the call coming up on Saturday night. And the best part of this, Noah, was we got through the interview and they didn't make us play the Bob Costas audio.
Syracuse legend. I will maintain
line drive base.
No! Don't. Come on.
It was smothered out there. I don't know if it was caught.
It was caught.
Oh, my gosh.
Smothered. Excellent.
What a play.
Excellent verbiage on smothered.
You don't need to say anything, Noah. Don't do that.
It was caught.
Audio courtesy of TBS? TBS. Noah, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Have a wonderful call of the game, and hopefully we will get you again soon.
I appreciate you guys, and just to let you know where I was watching last night anyway, let's go Mets.
Now I don't feel bad
salt
doing
it. Salt in the wounds, Frankie.
Yeah, you know where Francisco Lindor came from, Pally?
Linsanity, man.
Yeah, we developed him,
fantastic.
Okay?
Fantastic. Wonderful. Noah Eagle, NBC Sports, the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Daryl came after us for talking about Jose Ramirez. We've touched the third rail.
Isn't that amazing that Jose somehow has become this polarizing figure? Because everybody else has played so poorly that because he's played poorly, they can't make up for everybody else playing poorly. Or maybe vice versa. And so now the target is squarely on him for a lot of fans.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he's the most beloved guy we have.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird situation. Like, that wouldn't happen. Like, LeBron James is not going to have bad playoffs. Like, it happened maybe one time in his career. He had one bad NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't happen in that sport. Baseball's totally different. Like, people are telling you all the different amazing MLB players, Hall of Famers, that were not good in the playoffs.
LeBron also wouldn't only get four shots to affect a game,
yeah,
though.
You're right. It's a different sport. It's a totally different sport.
216-474-0092. I don't do it because I love Jose Ramirez. I asked whether or not we could. Can we criticize Jose Ramirez?
People
for
are.
For this postseason performance. Can we do it?
I mean, yeah, I'm critical. Like, he needs to play better or they're going down. Like, he needs to get a couple of hits today or else they're probably going down and we don't get to see him again. They're not coming back for game five.
He needs more than hits. He needs runs batted in today. We need it.
And
we
he's
need it hit from him.
If yeah, Kwan's going to
come
on.
Out, if Kwan's going to come out and get on base three times, we've got to move him around. We've got to get him in.
Let me get to the phones here. Demos and Shane first hand. Then we're going to get to this Mark Ross audio. Hello, Demos.
Good morning. So, hi. Look, the olden days when there was just American League and National League, right? You got two teams that make the playoffs. They'll go right to the World Series, right? Then they started doing the different divisions. And what that allows is teams that are playing better at the end of the year to do better. And now we've got the wild card. And Detroit is just playing better right now. But, look, Jose is going to be fine. In 3 years from now, he's going to have the statue. If anything, will be beloved in Kim Anderson incident. So I'm not worried about his legacy and this and that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of players. Ernie Banks never won a World Series and, you know, and it was in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, this is just baseball, Ken. Sorry. That's the real reason.
Oh, so every baseball conversation comes back to it's just baseball, so everything's fine?
Yeah, baseball's completely different in terms of the percentages and the decision-making and the analytics. And like you said, if Jose's only up four times, five times, you know, he better make something happen, and I think it's fair to criticize him.
Oh, okay. So I just don't like to say it's baseball. We got it because Stephen Vogt just can't throw up his hands and say it's baseball, Demos.
Look, he's more loquacious than me, so I hope he does say more than that. But for a simple guy like me, it's just baseball.
You are not a simple guy. You're anything but simple, Demos. Thank you very much for the call.
Well, think about how different this is. Like, Lamar Jackson two-time MVP, is clearly one of the top quarterbacks and overall players in the NFL, but doesn't perform and hasn't performed in the playoffs, has no real playoff success to speak of, and he gets hammered for it. In baseball, it is a very, very different way that we treat this stuff. And I think, like, the football fans that watch baseball kind of casually want to jump into baseball and rip guys that don't perform in the playoffs up and down. When, you know, take any 35, he's played 35 career games, right? Take any 35 sample in any regular season, and even the best players are terrible. So it's not, like, do you think it's a pressure thing? Because really good Major League Baseball players have really struggled in the playoffs. Like, is it a, or is it if you give them enough opportunities, they'll eventually come around, like Clayton Kershaw?
It's an impossible, yes. I think that there's a little bit more there. I mean, when we talk about some of the greatest players to ever do it in the postseason, they play for teams that tend to have a lot of opportunities to do it. I mean, how many, did you say three games or three at-bats for Mike Trout in the postseason?
Three games. He's had three games.
Okay. I was like, was there like a wild card game that I missed, like a play-in or something like that? There's more pressure on Jose than there would be other guys. Now, Aaron Judge has a lot of opportunities to hit in the postseason because he plays for a team that, damn it, with their payroll should be there. Other guys have stepped up. Giancarlo Stanton stepped up last night for them. But Jose Ramirez plays on a team that might not have that many opportunities to do so. They are blessed to be in the postseason often because they've made the right moves. However, they are usually a team that has a lot of guys around their leading player who doesn't have a lot of experience. So there's more pressure on him to perform. Plus, I mean, let's be honest, we're all just grinding here, and so he's a name that we all love and trust. And when he can't get a bat on a ball, then it seems like we all lose hope. In 10 years, I will not say any of these things about Jose Ramirez, that he was a stiff or that he was a choke artist or none of that will be said. Because I won't mean it. Why would I say it? But in this moment, he's not a stiff and he's not a choke artist. But man, I need him to get on base. I need him to knock some guys in. I need other guys to do their job. Andrés Giménez has been terrible. Terrible. And really has been timid at the plate all year. So there's so many things that we can start with that you don't really even know where to finish.
By the way, Giménez is our second highest paid player, right?
I understand that. $107
million, something like that?
Yeah. Yes. But there's going to be more pressure on a guy whose team is not at the highest payroll. But there's pressure on all these guys. They're in very small, they get very few chances to make a huge difference in big moments. The only thing I want to do is, to what Demos is saying, is to guarantee his spot in the Hall of Fame. He is a multiple time, he's a six-time All-Star now. I believe he will finish in the top five in MVP voting. Five times so far in his career, he's been fantastic. He's 31 years old. What is missing is a deep postseason run that would put him to some certain level here. People like to tell stories about these guys. I need my story. I don't want it to be Clay Matthews or anything like that. He's been fantastic for this team. But I don't want to have that type of memory, and I am uncomfortable with the entire conversation of criticizing Jose Ramirez. I didn't want to do it. Here we are. So that's a problem that we have.
And I mean, he's someone, he did have big moments in 2016. You know, the first year he was in the postseason. It's just, man, it's crazy to think that run was 8 years ago.
All right, quick. Here's something to pick up our spirits. Here's Mark Ross yesterday on Afternoon Drive, former NFL general manager.
Mark Ross on Amy Lawrence.
On Amy Lawrence. Beg your pardon. Go ahead.
Number one, you got to play Jameis Winston. You just have to, you know, for the psyche of everybody in that organization. Of course, on public record, the head coach, everybody said, yeah, we believe in Deshaun still, but I guarantee you there's not one person who thinks that guy can play anymore. And when you look week after week after week and you just see how abysmal he is as a player, you know, if his name was anything else and he didn't have that contract, there'd be no way he'd still be a starting quarterback in the NFL. And I just think, when you know that as a team and you're going in, the team, players are smart. They know. And when you're watching film every week and you're going through those games, that those guys probably just are looking like, what is going on here? This guy is killing us. And it's really his malpractice for an organization to keep trotting him out there because, I mean, he is beyond, at this point, really the worst quarterback in the league. And I think just Jameis, for better or for worse, he's the answer. Of course not, but at least Jameis has shown throughout his career that hey, he can put points up in the board. You know, he can move the ball. He can be streaky, and it seems as if he's got a lot more leadership quality to him there. So I think that Deshaun Watson situation may be the worst trade in the history of sports.
I mean, as of right now,
no,
yeah.
He's totally wrong. He's wrong. He's wrong. Yeah, he's wrong.
It's not the worst trade in the history of sports.
No, Bryce Young's the worst quarterback in the NFL, not Deshaun Watson. Come on. Ours is the second worst.
Well, what?
Come on, Mark Ross.
Between
get
that,
your facts straight.
Between that and playing, what was it, passable games like the Raiders, we are setting a very high bar here, are we not? Mitch, please.
All right, guys, this comes to us from the Weather Channel, of all places. This is Paul Goodlow on the Weather Channel, who bared Hurricane Milton during a live report in Sarasota, Florida yesterday. And his comparison in describing the upcoming second half of the hurricane's potential destruction may have irked some viewers in Atlanta.
You might still be in the eye right now. There's a lot more to go. I think back to, you know, the Atlanta Falcons' first half Super Bowl winner. We know what happened to the second half when the Patriots came back to life. So do not sleep on the second half of Milton. And we're definitely concerned now with this surge.
All right, so our fans understand what's happening because that's the analogy our fans would understand. So I think that's good. It's a way to connect. Like he could use a music analogy if he's talking to fans of music.
What would be the fans of music? What's the analogy that Anthony Lima, big-time music lover?
Stairway to Heaven. You know how the song starts compared to how it finishes?
Yeah. Crescendo.
Yeah. Or Eric Clapton, Layla.
That's a better example.
I love that piano part, yeah.
So at least he's finding a way to connect. Ridiculous. At least he didn't mention Kyle Shanahan.
I don't know. Was that Weather Channel you said?
It was.
These guys are out there for 12 hours at a time talking into the ether. I can sympathize.
I was watching yesterday. The girl on the Weather Channel was sitting there, and you could tell. You can differentiate who knows what they're talking about, and sometimes on the local affiliates who doesn't. So I'm watching her, and she is in real time going, oh, my God, zoom in. Tornado developing right there. Tornado. Because on land, there were tornadoes developing while the other cells were going on as they were making landfall, and she was diagnosing all of this like John Madden would with the Telestrator. I was blown away by how good this woman was, and she was telling people, she clearly lives in Florida or knows Florida. She was telling people where to evacuate, where to go to, like city streets. I was like, this woman should have her salary tripled. She was that good.
Well, you'd
have to move to Milwaukee for that.
Okay, come on. You get to know the lay of the land. Just saying that.
I was impressed.
Also, if you're able to help out through first responders and the Red Cross, make sure you can, because a lot of us have. Did you see the video of Little John down there? Little John down there?
I did. I love it. It was Fox 8 ran.
Bill Martin's down there.
So they ran a story of people in Florida who weren't evacuating, depending on where they were, and it was all former Fox 8 anchors. I'm like, man, they must pay well. They all live.
They've all retired.
Their last act, they're all down in Florida in really nice areas.
Well, I'm just not the guy who ever wants to do that. I never want, and it's not because of any of this. I just don't want to move to Florida. I mean, this doesn't help. Don't get me wrong. I just don't want to move to Florida. It's just not a destination for me. I like it here. I can't see, like, if I were going to move anywhere else, like, it's like, Ken, you have to retire and move. Why do I keep thinking, like, Maine?
Kenny Bunkport. That's why.
Bahaba.
Why do I keep thinking I'd move to Maine? I've been to Maine
Vermont,
twice in
maybe?
My life. Mitch, you were just in Maine. What's Maine like?
Maine is very remote and pretty quiet.
This is where Walter White retired to. He went to Vermont.
That's true.
There's nobody who's positive about the Guardians right now. None of this is positive. Guys, they're not going to go 29 innings without, record this. They are not going to go 29 innings without scoring and lose this game today. They may not win it, but they're going to not be scoreless. They're going to score runs.
But what's funny is,
stop.
Literally, Jose Ramirez can change everything with one swing of a bat or two.
Yes.
Like everything we just talked about.
I think some of the negativity with another team in town is bleeding into this one. I know Vogt was definitely outmanaged yesterday and to a certain degree the day before. I get that. But I hope that I can hope. I hope that he learns from the missteps that he made yesterday and a little bit in game two, even though I think that some of that was a little bit overblown. I hope that he can get from that. But damn it, like, I cannot believe when you have Tanner Bibee on the mound that they're just going to go out there and not score tonight and not win the baseball game tonight. I do think that this is coming back for a game five. I won't guarantee it because that almost guarantees a loss if I guarantee it. I'm not going to be stupid, but I think that they're going to win this baseball game today. I think game five is the one we really have to worry about. And if we don't, if this is it, then yeah, like there's going to be a lot of people who are very upset with all this. They clearly, without a doubt. And I think that some of this stuff with the Browns is leaking over to the Guardians with our fan base, with what's going on, and we're losing faith. And I just don't think you can sit there and lose faith. This team, they lost that week of games. They were able to get back from it. I'm not going to count them out.
You got Bibee today. Come on. What are you worried about?
Man, there is no positivity going on with this right now, man.
How many pitchers do we see from Detroit?
They used seven yesterday, right?
What is that cat and mouse game going to look like?
Did they use seven yesterday?
Yeah, they're just refusing to tell us who's pitching for Detroit.
They used six. They're not going to do it.